There, please, to the book of Numbers. While you're turning to the book of Numbers, you can see on the screen, of course, what is the setting for some 39 years, I guess, 40, that the Jews were wandering in the Sinai Peninsula. This is yet another of the many pictures I've been showing on Sunday nights of the Sinai Desert there. Most uncomfortable country, a country that brings out both the best and the worst, I guess, of the people that are forced to live in circumstances like that. They are trying, to say the least. Now, if you've been coming on Sunday nights and Wednesday nights both, you'll have noticed that I've been trying to tie together the Wednesday night material with our Sunday evenings. And so we have the last three Sunday nights I've been with you, and again, I was gone for 2 weeks, but in the last Sunday nights, we've been looking at this man Moses, who is the centerpiece, the author of the first five books of the Bible, and then much of those books reveal the type of man that he was. And we saw in our first lesson that he was a man who had his weaknesses and had his reluctances. We saw that there were some seven times that he argued with God at the beginning. He did not want to be a spokesperson for the Lord. He did not want to be a great leader for the Lord when the time came that he should be. And we saw in that lesson at the end, of course, that God's answer to that was tough. You may not want to, but I've called you. I see in you the individual that I need. So he told him to get up and do the job. Moses, of course, did and entered into the ranks then of those faithful that we find listed in Hebrews chapter 11. Then had a lesson, though, that I used to serve somewhat as a counterbalance to that first one to show that Moses was also a most admirable character, a most commendable man, an amazing man. He had a faith that was apparently just knowing no bounds. He was one who was able to take advice as well as to give it. So he may be the central figure, great lawgiver and leader of Israel, but on occasion he was able to listen and to learn as well. He loved even those saints who were sinning. He was one who was quick even to seek from the Lord his mercy, his grace, and his patience, even in the midst of times where people were rebelling against him. But he was absolutely devoted to his God first. Not to the people first, but as much as he loved them, but to his God. And so, then we closed again that lesson. See, we have some 5 points there. That he was, though, dedicated to those people. He not only loved them, which sometimes is a kind of a natural thing. People do have their, you know, attractive qualities and traits as well. But he was dedicated to those people and willing then, when called upon, to represent and to rescue even those people. He was, you know, everything that we think of him as being. He is a man who is just preeminent as an example of what that faithful human being ought to be. Now, having seen this much, kind of two sides of this great man, we are entering in, of course, into our study of Numbers now on Wednesday night. Moses is still the central figure. And so tonight what we're going to do is just look down through a list of occurrences where Moses himself is being put to the test. Many of these will involve those sinful saints and will reveal the dedication that he had to them, but they are all of them personally difficult. The life of Moses was far from easy. The life of this leader was one of constant travail. It was one of very little respect on many occasions, very little appreciation for who he was and what he was trying to accomplish. And so, tonight we're going to be tying together not only, you know, our Wednesday night material with the Sunday night material, but what so far have we seen has been the central theme of both the first chapter, and we've seen it in several other chapters, of the book of James that we're studying on Sunday morning. It is trials. The attitude you should have in trials, the things that you should know as you're confronting those trials, and then the behaviors that God expects of us in response to those trials. So what I've done for tonight's lesson is just to go through the book of Numbers. That's our central book. look for places where Moses was put to the test, and I've been able to find 10 in the book of Numbers. It's rather oddly named, if you ask me, Numbers, because while there are two places where you get these lengthy lists, you know, that do involve an enumeration of the various tribes and peoples and whatnot, this book, the book of Numbers, it has just numerous stories about what happened in the wilderness, and really more than in Exodus, hardly any in Leviticus at all. And so, of course, we're going to be seeing some in Deuteronomy with regard to Moses' second telling of his experiences in the law. But it's Numbers particularly that fleshes out these stories. Now, for instance, this evening, Ron was reading of a trial that Moses had to face, the giving of the manna, the quail that God used. But we're going to see, for instance, that the account of that story in Numbers is much more full. So everybody, please, come to Numbers chapter 11. We'll just go one by one through this, and the one about quail is not the first, but take a look at chapter 11 and the first three verses. Now the people became like those who complain of adversity in the hearing of the Lord. And when the Lord heard it, his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed them on the outskirts of the camp. The people therefore cried out to Moses, and Moses prayed to the Lord, and the fire died out. So the name of that place was called Taberah, or Taberah, I'm not sure about the pronunciation, because the fire of the Lord burned among them. The word, as you can see probably in your footnote, that actually means burning. Now, as my knowledge, the only place we have this particular account given, and what do we have? We have Moses at the very beginning of his working with these people in the wilderness after they've come out of Egypt. These people are like those who what? Complain of adversity. Now I'd like for you to think about the expression and the way that's presented to us. There's a class or a group of people who, when faced with adversity, do what? They complain. But right off the bat, brethren, I hope that will show us that there's also a class or group of people who, when confronted with adversity, are not moaners and gripers and whiners and grousers and complainers. These people were among those that respond to adversity in that way. And when people respond to adversity with complaint, then what are we told right here at the beginning is God's reaction when people complain about adversity? It enrages him. It angers him. And what have we been learning from James about adversity? It's great. Right? Come on, you remember our first lesson. You have to count it as joy. You have to force yourself to put it in that column. You know, it's not naturally like that. But line after line in the early going of the book of James is explaining to us, when faced with adversity, farthest thing, you know, from a proper response is complaining, you should count it as joy. You should know that it is perfecting your character. You should know that you will benefit from this thing. You'll be a better person. And God knows it. And that's a reason why he sometimes sends that adversity into your life. When God sends you adversity and you whine about it, you are questioning his wisdom. You are doubting, you know, his love. And there may be a host of other sins that you might lay on to that. Because adversity is never fun. Y'all know what a weed whacker is? I don't think so. If your picture is a machine, battery powered, so that their effort involves flipping the switch, and now you've got another one, you know, that's just cutting a swath everywhere you go, then you don't know what the weed whacker was my dad put in my hand. The weed whacker daddy gave me, that one had a wooden handle on it. It also had a metal blade about yay long, set at an angle. And that's where the term whacking weeds came from. That's what I had to do with weeds. I wasn't waving weeds. I was whacking weeds. And I can remember
being a ripe old age, about 14, and my dad sending me down there in that little canyon that we had, you know, to whack weeds. And what was I doing the whole time? I was like one who complained about adversity, okay? But brethren, I was also learning, you know, that I did have to pull my weight in this family. He was, after all, feeding and sheltering and helping my way and everything. You see, and I was growing stronger, and my young body needed that too. You know, in every way, the thing was really better for me and keeping me out of trouble too. I get into a fair amount of that, as everybody does. If you're among those who complain about adversity, the next time you're tempted, then just kind of stop, look up a little bit, and think about Kibirah. Think about the burning. Think about the fire of the Lord for people who have that kind of an attitude. And then, if Moses has to live among these people, what is it like to live among people who whine? It's awful, isn't it? It's just the most depressing and annoying thing. And pretty soon you're complaining about the complainers. You just get that on you. So, chapter 11, verses 1 through 3, get past some introductory stuff in Numbers. It'll be the next to last chapter, you know, for this week. We'll be studying day after tomorrow. We find Moses is confronted with an entire class of people in that passage. God shows how he feels about it, and then Moses is going to be put to the trial himself. So you read the next verse. The rabble who were among them had greedy desires. Also the sons of Israel wept again and said, "Who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish which we used to eat free in Egypt, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic, but now our appetite is gone. There's nothing at all to look at except this manna." Now the manna was like coriander seed, its appearance like that of bdellium. The people would go about and gather it and grind it between two millstones or beat it on the mortar and boil it in the pot, make cakes with it. Its taste was as the taste of cakes baked with oil. When the dew fell on the camp at night, the manna would fall with it. What is that? God's miraculous blessing of food and nourishment. And how are the people responding to it? Among those who complained. So in 10, Moses heard the people weeping throughout their families, each man at the doorway of his tent, and the anger of the Lord was kindled greatly. Well, if the first three verses didn't show us what his anger was like on the greatly scale, you know, this is worse. And Moses was what? Displeased. So Moses said to the Lord, "Why have you been so hard on your servant? Why have I not found favor in your sight, and you've laid the burden of all this people on me? Was it I who conceived all this people? Was it I who brought them forth? That you should say to me, 'Carry them in your bosom as a nurse carries a nursing infant to the land which thou didst swear to their fathers.' Where am I to get meat to give to all this people? They weep before me, saying, 'Give us meat that we may eat.' I alone am not able to carry all this people, because it's too burdensome for me. So if you're going to deal thus with me, please kill me at once, if I have found favor in your sight, and do not let me see my wretchedness." The Lord therefore said to Moses, "Gather for me 70 men from the elders of Israel, whom you know to be the elders of the people, and their officers. Bring them to the tent of meeting. Let them take their stand there with you. Then I will come down and speak with you there. And I will take of the Spirit who is upon you, will put him upon them, and they shall bear the burden of the people with you, so that you shall not bear it alone." Now, brethren, again, this is a very full account here. It's going to be developed even more as we go deeper into this chapter. But at this point, in this trial, how does Moses look like he's doing? Kill me now? And it looks to me like, among those that are complaining, Moses might be a leader there too, huh? Are they all my children? You know? Do I bring all these people in? How am I going to do that? It's too much for me. But that's the case, and I don't mean to minimize it, it doesn't look good. Okay? However, what do you learn in the Lord's response? What did the Lord do in response to Moses' statement? He called 70 men to give him relief. God looked down and realized Moses was not just a weak whiner. What was happening to Moses just then? He was at the end of his limit. He was apparently at wit's end. He just wanted to lay down and die. Okay? And God's response there was, okay, I'm going to give you 70 guys to distribute the load. Now, by the way, unless we should charge the Lord, you know, with overdoing it, then if it's going to take 70 men to help carry Moses' load, does that give you an idea of what he was confronting? I think it pretty well shows it was absolutely overwhelming, doesn't it? So once again, I'm not saying, well, what Moses did there was just perfect, right, fine, and dandy. I'm not so sure that it was. But at the same time, the Lord's response was not Tabira. The Lord's response was, okay, I'm going to give you some help now. But Moses, brethren, at this point, is under what kind of stress? It is as extreme as it can get. There aren't too many times, and I think he meant it right here. He is talking to God, after all, who had all the power to answer his prayer with just what he was asking for. You know, this man was experiencing something none of us can really imagine. There were 605,000 people plus that were looking to him to be the leader. He was just being crushed by it. Now, read on, though. Now, 18 through 25. Say to the people, consecrate yourselves for tomorrow, and you shall eat meat. For you have wept in the ears of the Lord, saying, oh, that someone would give us meat to eat, for we were well off in Egypt. Therefore the Lord will give you meat, and you shall eat. You shall eat not one day, nor 2 days, nor 5 days, nor 10 days, nor 20 days, but a whole month, until it comes out of your nostrils and becomes loathsome to you, because you have rejected the Lord who is among you, and have wept before him, saying, why did we ever leave Egypt? But Moses said, the people among whom I am are 600,000 on foot. Yet you said, I'll give them meat in order that they may eat for a whole month. Should flocks and herds be slaughtered for them to be sufficient for them? Should all the fish of the sea be gathered together for them to be sufficient for them? And the Lord said to Moses, is the Lord's power limited? Now you shall see whether my word will come true for you or not. So Moses went out and told the people the words of the Lord. Also he gathered 70 men of the elders of Israel, stationed them around the tent. So now he's implementing what God told him to do. And then the Lord came down in the cloud and spoke to him. And he took of the Spirit who was upon him, placed him upon the 70 elders. And it came about, when the Spirit rested upon them, they prophesied, but they did not do it again. It was a singular event. They were identified as Moses' helpers. They were inspired to prophesy. The people saw it. They recognized we have a new group or class of people that are going to be leading us. How's Moses doing still? He's still doubting, isn't he? He's still struggling. He's saying, I would have to slaughter every animal we have. I would have to empty the ocean. Mediterranean Sea, I presume, or Red Seas, or whichever. I can't do it! Now, brother, have you ever got to the point where you could see absolutely no way to do it? Many of us get there, and some of us many times. And you know why you feel that way? It's because you can't see how to do it. It's because there really isn't any way that you can see. And when, brethren, is the only time that faith will actually exist in your life? When you can't trust yourself. When you are not wise enough to figure out what to do. The test only comes when your resources have run out. Moses is a marvelous man. We saw in the first lesson he had some weaknesses. We saw in the second lesson he had some great strength. And we're looking at this lesson to see that he was going back and forth between those things. But what he was finding and what he was developing, brethren, were the limits of his faith. Now at this point, God doesn't seem real pleased with him. And so he tells him, Moses, I'm going to show you. Remember, the people are grumbling. Moses is to some extent too. What he just said is, Moses, I'm going to show you. Now, come to chapter 12. I've got to say, and he did. Okay? So I'm looking at the trials tonight. You know what happened. The quail came. We have this more full account of what Ron read tonight here in Numbers. God answers. Now, can Moses believe that God will take care of feeding the people? Sure. Can God give meat if we need it?
Yeah. Until it comes out of our noses. Okay, now skip to the first 15 verses of 12. Then, now notice, it's immediately after this event. The people were whining, the people were complaining, fire came from heaven. The people were whining, the people were complaining, and birds miraculously appear till they can't stand it anymore. And then, immediately after that, in chapter 12 and verse 1, Miriam, who's that? Moses' sister. And Aaron, who's that? Yeah. Spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman whom he had married. Or he had married a Cushite woman. And they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us as well? And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very humble, more than any man who was on the face of the earth. And suddenly the Lord said to Moses and Aaron and to Miriam, you three come out to the tent of meeting. So the three of them came out. Let's stop there for just a second. When you say to your kids, you three meet me in the living room. In the old days it was, you three meet me in the woodshed. What do you know? This is bad. This is way bad. Okay? Now, one more thing about Miriam. What had just happened in Exodus to Miriam when they came to the Red Sea on dry land with walls of water on both sides? What happened to Miriam when they got to the far shore? She was filled with the Spirit, and we have this entire song, you know, of Miriam that she presented. Did she know that God had spoken through her? She did. Okay? And what is she arguing here? Well, brother, you're not the only one. Now, let's see how this develops. In verse 5, the Lord came down in a pillar of cloud and stood at the doorway of the tent. And he called Aaron and Miriam, and when they had both come forward, he said, hear now my words. If there's a prophet among you, I, the Lord, shall make myself known to him in a vision. I shall speak with him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my household. With him I speak mouth to mouth, even openly and not in dark sayings. And he beholds the form of the Lord. And we've talked about this. You can't behold the Lord's face and die. But Moses was in the cleft of the rock, and he saw the back. He hears God's actual voice. He's closer than anybody else. And then, why then, last part of 8, were you not afraid to speak against my servant, against Moses? So the anger of the Lord burned against them. He departed. But when the cloud had withdrawn from over the tent, behold, Miriam, leprous as snow. As Aaron turned toward Miriam, behold, she was leprous. And then Aaron said to Moses, oh, my Lord, I beg you, do not account this sin to us, in which we've acted foolishly and in which we've sinned. Oh, do not let her be like one dead whose flesh is half eaten away when he comes from his mother's womb. And Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, oh God, heal her, I pray. But the Lord said to Moses, if her father had but spit in her face, would she not bear her shame for 7 days? Let her be shut up for 7 days outside the camp, and afterward she may be received again. So Miriam was shut up outside the camp for 7 days, and the people did not move on until Miriam was received again. What is Moses facing?
His own sister.
Now, you have sisters and brothers at this point. He wouldn't mean Larry his own sister. I mean, that's all I've known since they first could walk and pop. Yes, siblings have their rivalries. But when you have become God's chosen leader over an exodus to start a new nation in the promised land, removed from slavery, and your sister is all up in your face that she wants to have, you know, power and authority too, how's that going to feel? That's really going to rankle. Really, if you have brothers and sisters, and most of us do, and you've been through the squabbles and all the stuff, you know, that, you know, there is in that. Hopefully you get past it and learn better, you know, as you grow up. But what Moses is experiencing right here really hurts when brothers and sisters don't trust each other, don't respect each other. It hurts.
Few things hurt that much. Moses is really being tested here. And then, suddenly, she's white leprous. What's happening to Aaron? God save her, God save her, God save her. Okay? And Moses? Same thing. Let's rescue the sister. Now, in chapter 14, skip to 14. It's necessary that we just go really fast because I just want you to see these all in one place. In Numbers chapter 14, look at the first 5 verses. All the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night, and all the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, "Would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we had died in this wilderness, and why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become plunder. Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt?" So they said to one another, "Let us appoint a leader and return to Egypt." And then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces in the presence of all the assembly of the congregation of the sons of Israel. It just knocked them flat. Brethren, this is already, as you can see, the 5th time that these people have rebelled against God and against Moses. And in all these rebellions now, they're taking place in very rapid succession. The people are seeing devastating responses from God and not learning a thing. Now, when somebody doesn't get it, what starts happening in your mind? Why should I have to put up with this? They are never going to get it. Okay? Well, watch how this develops in verse 10. All the congregation said to stone them with stones. And then the glory of the Lord appeared in the tent of meeting to all the sons of Israel. And the Lord said to Moses, "How long will this people spurn me? How long will they not believe in me, despite all the signs which I have performed in their midst? I will smite them with pestilence and dispossess them. I will make you into a nation greater and mightier than they." But Moses said to the Lord, "Then the Egyptians will hear of it. For by your strength you brought up this people from their midst. They'll tell it to the inhabitants of this land. They've heard that you, O Lord, are in the midst of this people. For you, O Lord, are seen eye to eye while the cloud stands over them. And you go before them in a pillar of cloud by day and in a pillar of fire by night. Now, if you slay this people as one man, then the nations who've heard of your fame will say, 'Because the Lord could not bring this people into the land which he promised them by oath, therefore he slaughtered them in the wilderness.'" Brethren, Moses is saying, "God, you'll be accused of weakness. You'll be accused of failure. You'll be accused of ineptitude, incompetence, and inability." But now, in verse 17, he says, "I pray, let the power of the Lord be great, just as you have declared. The Lord," St. James, "is slow to anger and abundant in loving kindness, forgiving iniquity and transgression. But he will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generations." Very troublesome statement. We'll talk about that probably Wednesday night or in the next class. Now in 19. pardon, I pray, the iniquity of this people according to the greatness of your loving kindness, just as you have forgiven this people from Egypt even until now. He knows it's been a lot of forgiveness necessary. So the Lord said, I have pardoned them. Now, brethren, here's your operative word there. Look at the next word. How? Why? According to your word. Now, the people have been complaining. The complaints had reached such a level that Moses just wanted God to strike him down. He couldn't see any way out of this. It's impossible. I can't feed these people. What am I going to do? His own sister turns against him. Now, all these people are about to stone him. And this is because they're standing at the borders of the promised land. They sent the spies in. The spies brought back a report that the land is great. Right? There are 4 to 5 cities. The people are pretty big. What have we been learning, if anything? Can God handle it? Yes. And instead, what do the people do? They say, let's kill Moses. Let's kill the 2 of the spies that are still thinking we ought to go in. Let's just stone him to death right now. Let's get a new leader. Let's leave. How does Moses respond? Brethren, when Moses is faced with adversity, yeah, there are times when he fails. But like James maybe has suggested, what do you learn in your trials? And as we've been watching these failures in Moses, what do we find now? When I'm thinking, for me, last straw, I've had it. You know, I mean, how long is this going to have to go on? What is Moses doing now? Now he's pleading for the people. Now he's thinking about God's glory. Now he's worried, you know, that God's reputation might be maligned and damaged. This is a man whose trials, brethren, have made something out of him, haven't they? This is a man who came to the point of just cracking. And when he did, God gave him 70 men to help him out. And little by little, Moses seems to be rising now to this occasion, doesn't he? So, he pleads, he begs, and God says, according to your request, I will spare these people. Chapter 14, continuing now, but skipping down to verse 26, same chapter, but in verse 26. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, how long shall I bear with this evil congregation who are grumbling against me? I've heard the complaints of the sons of Israel, which they're making against me, saying to them, as I live, says the Lord, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so I will surely do to you. Your corpses shall fall in this wilderness, even all your numbered men, according to your complete number, from 20 years old and upward, who have grumbled against me. Surely you shall not come into the land in which I swore to settle you, except Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun. Your children, however, whom you said would become a prey, I will bring them in, and they shall know the land which you have rejected. But as for you, your corpses shall fall in this wilderness. Now skip to 39. When Moses spoke these words to all the sons of Israel, the people mourned greatly. In the morning, however, they rose up early and went up to the ridge of the hill country, saying, here we are, we have indeed sinned, but we'll go up to the place which the Lord has promised. But Moses said, why then are you transgressing the commandment of the Lord when it will not succeed? Do not go up, lest you be struck down before your enemies, for the Lord is not among you. The Amalekites, the Canaanites will be there in front of you. You will fall by the sword, inasmuch as you have turned back from following the Lord, and the Lord will not be with you. But they went up heedlessly to the ridge of the hill country. Neither the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord nor Moses left the camp. And then the Amalekites and Canaanites who lived in that hill country came down, struck them, and beat them down as far as Horma. Now, brethren, these things are happening in very rapid succession. And when God tells them in no uncertain terms, you people that would have stoned Moses and Joshua and Caleb, your corpses will fall in the wilderness. Do they get it? Well then, okay, you told us not to go in the land now because we sinned, so we'll go ahead and try and go in the land. What is it? This is direct rebellion. brother, it's just amazing. Your kids, you know, come up to Disneyland and then they commit some heinous crime and sin and it's so awful, and you say to them, that is it. We are going home. And they say to you, oh, Daddy, we sinned, and run for the gates. How are you feeling about this? And yet, what is Moses doing on their behalf? He's begging them, don't go. I've got to obey the Lord. I am not leaving the camp. God said, don't. I won't. And he had to watch them go. But he begged them not to go. Now, how tempting would it have been to say, look at all this. Go for it. Shake off the dust. You know, this becoming a new nation thing is getting to be a better idea by the minute, isn't it? Okay? And you find that in Moses? Brethren, I'm thinking that these trials are what made the man that we think of as Moses. In chapter 16, long run, I don't have time for it. I have to leave time for the Lord's table. I have to remember that we have reversed that. Raise your hand if you need to partake the Lord's Supper this evening. Okay, we've got several people that do. Okay, so I'm going to have to stop right there. But I'll tell you what, I'll just leave this for you. The next one is Korah's Rebellion, and y'all remember that, don't you? And what did the earth do? What was Moses facing every step of the way? People rebelling against his authority. Every step of the way, they complained about him. And what did Moses become when he caught nothing but grief, faithlessness, and sin to the point that they wanted to kill him? What did Moses become? Their advocate, their defender, their pleader before God. Brethren, James and Moses teach us who we can be, how we can grow in trials. And if you would like to be known among God's people, remember the picture? Like this. If you want to be like Moses, brethren, what do you got to go through to get there? Don't say the Red Sea. What do you got to go through to get there? Maybe just endless misery. Be worth it? Be worth it. Praise God. So, if you have the desire to become a Christian this evening, though I think I know every face, or other prayer request, please let's stand and sing. And if I could ask...